We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now. Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. I am the most consistent motherfucker you know, Dave Smith. I am joined by Robbie the Fire Bernstein, King of the Cocks. What's going on, my brother?
I like how formal my intro is.
Yeah, it's not getting old.
No.
I am enjoying it every time. Maybe at some point it will, but it's sticking for a while. Well, I got an announcement to make before we start the show, which has already been announced on social media, but just for anybody listening who maybe is not on the Facebook or the Twitter, because they have become authoritarian instruments of the state.
Or they got the boot. That happens to people too.
Well, that's kind of what I mean. That's part of their authoritarianism. Either you've gotten booted or you've just been like, fuck this, I don't want to contribute to this mess. Anyway, Gene Epstein did announce this. We just put this together a short time ago. I think it was just confirmed a couple days ago. But I will be stepping into the ring.
I'm going to fucking kill Soho that guy.
Forum. Yes. Cage match to the death. Through the spoken word. A debate. I will be debating Nicholas Sarwak, the chairman of the Libertarian Party. We are going to be debating on September 10th. At the Soho Forum here in New York City. This thing is going to sell out very quickly. I'm already seeing that it's generating a lot of buzz online. So if you do want to come to it, make sure you go to thesohoforum.org and purchase tickets soon. If not, it'll be up online and you can see it after that. But we will be debating on the future of the Libertarian Party.
The cocks will rise.
This is the day, September 10th. The cocks will rise. Robbie will be there on his throne with his crown and scepter.
I can bring like a Burger King crown.
Yeah, you, dude.
And a Mecock shirt.
Dude, please come with a Burger King crown on. That would be amazing.
Scepter? Where do you get a scepter from?
99 cent store? I don't know.
I've crown and scepter. To support you and your cause against the Libertarian Party and putting up shitty candidates that don't know.
Well, that's what the resolution of the debate. I don't have the exact wording in front of me, but it's something along the lines that the Libertarian Party should never again put up candidates like Gary Johnson and Bill Weld. So it's a very vague, you know, kind of what does that mean? And, you know, it's but it opens the door for a lot of different debate. Now, people who listen to the show may be aware that in the past I have said that Nicholas Sarwak is bad, for lack of more specific term. Then the next day, September 11th, the 1 year anniversary of my the debut of my first comedy special, Libertas.
Okay.
Or is that the 2 year anniversary? I can't even remember anymore.
I'm gonna say it's 2 years now.
Yeah, it's 2 years. That's right. It's the 2 year anniversary. Goddamn. Sorry, I don't get a lot of sleep. The 2 year anniversary of my my debut special being released. It is, in fact, 2 years. And of course the anniversary of some other major event in American history. I can't exactly remember.
That Nick guy did that too, right?
Yes, he was. That's right. Nick Sarwak was responsible for 9/11. He wasn't on the planes, but
he was helped involved. Orchestrate.
He was involved for sure. I'll be bringing all of this up at the debate, but Nick will be coming on the podcast. He was good enough to agree to do that. So we will have a chance to, debate, air out our grievances and see where things stand after that. So I'm very much looking forward to it. It should be a good show. I am pulling no punches in this exchange. So I'm very excited for this. It should be a lot of fun. Anyway, also, you know, me and Robbie are going to be at Porkfest this year. I'm going to be at Mises University this year. Got a lot of fun stuff coming up. Also, the weekend after next weekend, I believe, let me just check the dates. I'll be at Caroline's. If you're in the New York City area, I will be there on the 17th and 18th,
cool.
Friday and Saturday, opening for the great Big J Okerson.
Nice.
Louis J. Gomez on the show as well, so that should be a lot of fun. Go grab Louis's special if you haven't already. Louis J. Gomez presents Louis J. Gomez. Yeah, okay. So that's the announcing. Oh, and by the way, also, I recorded yesterday an episode of Lions of Liberty with Mark Clare, with Avins O'Brien and Walter Block, and we had like a debate discussion about abortion. Yeah, it's Avins was arguing the pro-choice side, I was arguing the pro-life side, and Walter Block was arguing just kill them all. Walter Block was arguing kill the baby and the mother.
Yeah.
It was a really radical position.
Just get rid of them.
Yes, he goes, everyone should die. And he made some good points. He was arguing his evictionism, kind of third way libertarian solution, or what he calls a principled compromise on the abortion issue. It was interesting. I mean, Walter Block is a super, super smart guy who's really put a lot of thought into the evictionism argument, and he makes some interesting points. I did come away from it, and not going too much on this, maybe just for a couple minutes, but I kind of felt like, look, Avins was very nice, and it was cool of her to come on the show. I just really, the further I get away from it, it's really unbelievable to me how little merit I see to the pro-choice argument. And all of the arguments that, you know, look, at one point she said that, you know, libertarians aren't about, you know, telling people what they can or can't do. And I was like, no, that's exactly what we're about. We are all about, the whole essence of libertarianism is telling people what they can and can't do. We're just very good at doing it. We say you can't initiate violence on other people. You can't initiate violence on peaceful people. You can't steal people's things. You can't trespass on people's property. You can't kill people. You can't rape people. You can't steal from people. Like, we tell people what they can and can't do all the time. So that's not the question. The question is just, is the baby a human life? And as I've said before on the show, it seems to me completely arbitrary to say that human life begins at any other point than conception. And the more I think about it, the more you realize there is no other point that you can really say human life begins. I mean, okay, an hour after conception, it doesn't really look like a baby or move like a baby or feel like a baby. But honestly, a 10-year-old doesn't really look like a newborn or feel like a newborn or act like a newborn. You know, you kind of keep growing throughout your whole life. What are you going to say? There's some stage in development. When it's a human life that you can't kill anymore? I mean, the human brain doesn't stop developing till 25. The rest of your body develops and deteriorates basically for your entire life. So it just seems to me that it's the only logical starting point is as soon as an egg is fertilized by a sperm, you're now on the track of being a human being, and that's the place to draw the line. Walter Block's position is a little bit more difficult to grapple with. And I guess what I really came away with it was this, but more or less Walter Block's argument is that if you look at this from a libertarian point of view through property rights and the non-aggression principle, the woman owns her body and therefore has the right to evict the fetus, but she doesn't have the right to kill the fetus. So you can evict the baby. So he'd agree with me. Life starts at conception. That is a baby. You don't have a right to kill the baby, but you can evict the baby from your body. But to me, well, for a couple reasons, it's almost a distinction without a difference. I mean, it's like, you know, the example that I've given before. If I have you on my hot air balloon 1,000 feet in the air, you're saying basically I can't kill you, but I can evict you from my hot air balloon. Well, why is there any difference between the two? I mean, it's killing you to evict you from the hot air balloon. So really, like, you're basically killing them. And I do believe that even in a libertarian society, in a private court, private law system, I think any reasonable, rational human beings, if we're living in a civilization, would say that you killed someone if you evicted them from your hot air balloon 1,000 feet in the air.
I protest because if it's a libertarian society, we will have gotten rid of all the queefs. There won't be any hot air balloons. That's a queef activity. The free market, we're going to phase that thing right out. The only reason there are hot air balloons out there is because of government protection towards these people and their weird dating habits.
God damn it, Rob. You're not on the show to poke holes in my analogies, but you just did a pretty good one. Okay, fine. An airplane, Rob. We'll still have airplanes.
All right.
Unless AOC gets her way, but she's already been hung in the public square in a libertarian society. Yeah, you are right, but you're not getting renewed for your next episode contract after that little thing. But I tend to think you might be right. Hot air balloon riders, builders. They're all statists. The libertarians wouldn't be having any of that. But anyway, I was saying, but so I guess where I would come down on this, what I kind of finished the debate feeling, because I really did go into this with, tried to go into it with an open mind. Like, you know, I used to be pro-choice. I'm now pro-life. It's probably the newest opinion that I've had that I've changed my mind on. And I'm fairly open to like, well, what are the arguments? What maybe am I missing? I'd say this. If we got to a point technologically where eviction was a real thing that didn't involve murder, like if a woman could, if we had the medical technology where you could take a baby and remove it from the woman's body, simulate a womb, you know, technologically, like in some test tube somewhere, the baby can grow up and then it can be adopted by two parents who love it and want the baby. Sure, then I'd be fine with eviction. However, in reality, in the world we live in, there is not one single type of abortion that is performed, like the actual procedure of abortion, which there are several different types. Every single one of them is murdering the baby, and in really grotesque ways.
Don't they kill it before they suck it out?
In some cases.
So then, according to Walter, that would be murder because he killed it while it was inside? It's not even a process of the eviction. It was dead before you took it out.
I guess Walter
Block... He wants to say if the eviction's a byproduct... I mean, if death is a byproduct of the eviction...
Well, I'm not sure. I think he would say that basically you're just evicting it. But
if you kill it first, you killed it while it was inside.
Well, look, I mean, technically speaking, I guess there it's a little bit of a gray area because in an early first-term abortion, what they're doing is they're giving you a pill that is going to make your body stop producing... progesterone, which is the hormone that basically allows the baby to live. So you're going to stop producing progesterone. The baby's going to die inside of you. Then you're going to take another pill that'll bring on contractions, and basically you'll flush the dead baby out. So I guess if we're going in a strict sense of property rights, is that your progesterone that you stopped? Either way, to me, you're almost in a sense starving a baby that's inside of you. To me, that is killing the baby. And then, of course, the other forms, like the suction abortions, are just brutal. I mean, they rip arms and legs off of the fetus. I mean, so the example I said to Walter Block was like, well, if someone like trespasses on your property and you have a super vacuum cleaner that you suck his arms and legs off of his body to remove him, I'd think of that as being a little bit excessive. And look, anyway... to me, it's killing a baby. I also rejected the trespasser analogy because I just think trespassing is inherently you going somewhere that you're not supposed to be. I don't know where a fetus is supposed to be other than its mother's womb. That would seem like the right place for a fetus to be to me. And anyway, I just, you know, so at the end of all of it, you know, what Walter Block said at one point was, you know, because I was using analogies, you know, like analogies of, you know, bringing people up in your hot air balloon or blah, 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 the other thing. And he said, you know, that he didn't like going down this road of analogies because he goes, it's inching toward violating property rights, and a society that protects property rights is going to be a much better society. We want to be in a society where we, you know, libertarians have to be cruel in our application of property rights. I believe those were his exact words. And, you know, look, I have a tremendous amount of respect for Walter Block. I guess the way I looked at it was just that, look, no society that's ever lived has protected property rights the way me or you or Walter Block would like them to. And I do agree it would be a much better world if there were societies that did that. However, there have been societies that value human life more or less than others. And to me, the ones that value human life less are very problematic. I would also add, and I should have thought of saying this during the actual conversation, but basically our position right in the status quo in America is protecting the property rights of the women. I mean, abortion is the law of the land, and we have, you know, I don't know, somewhere between 600,000 and a million of them every year. So how's that working out for leading to a society that protects property rights? Who are the ones championing abortion? They're the biggest statists amongst us. I would err on the side of wanting to live in a society that protects human life, values human life, and doesn't think of babies as things that can be killed. Anyway, if you want to check it out, it should be up in the next few days over at the Lions of Liberty. So yeah, go check them out. All right, let's get into the show. So the last podcast, we had Scott Horton on. We talked a lot about Venezuela because I thought, and it was a concerted effort on my part, that I was like, I'm going to spend Wednesday's episode talking about Venezuela, and then in Friday we can get into all this Bill Barr, congressional hearing, Mueller craziness, because it really is something that's incredible. And me and you were chatting about it in the office next door before the show started, that this thing in Venezuela is getting so little media coverage in comparison to this Bill Barr story, which is an absolute nothing burger. Like, there is nothing even remotely newsworthy in this story. But you were saying, you know, like, it's pretty shocking how little coverage the Venezuela thing has been getting.
I've seen zero. Zero in Google News, zero in the Wall Street Journal over the last 3 days. I think Reddit World News, Reddit Politics. I've seen zero on this.
Yeah. Well, this is one of the things that it's a real comment on the state of media. And this is part of the reason why, and I didn't mean to sound like a prick about it, but it's part of the reason why I did spend some time patting us on the back for getting this whole Trump-Russia collusion story completely right. And it's like I said many times, I go, it's insane that a couple idiot comedians like me and you can get the biggest story of the last 2 years completely right. See it easily. Like, this is so obvious. It was so obvious. I mean, I hate to repeat myself, but it was so fucking obvious. It's like Donald Trump said in a press conference, Russia, if you have the emails, I hope you release them. It's like, that's proof that he's conspiring with the Russians. Like, no, that's kind of proof that he's not conspiring with the Russians. Because if he was conspiring with them, why would he have to announce it at a press conference? Why would he announce it at a press conference if he was in the middle of some criminal conspiracy with the Russians? You know, if you're committing treason, you'd think you'd probably try to keep that on the low. You wouldn't be advertising. Even if you looked at the Roger Stone indictment, basically what they were saying that he lied to Congress about was going and trying to find out if WikiLeaks had more information about Hillary Clinton. Well, if the conspiracy was true, why would he not know? If he was a part of this conspiracy with the Russians and WikiLeaks, why would he be going to try to find this out? It's none of it made sense. But the thing that's important that you almost have to realize is that that's the state of the media today. That CNN is a less reliable source than this stupid podcast. That's fucking insane. Up is down and down is up. This doesn't make any sense. Like, it shouldn't be working this way. They have a multi-billion-dollar budget, and we have, you know, the king of the cocks. That's what we're bringing to the table, and we're getting it right, and they're getting it wrong. So, again, you know, as you see Alex Jones, who's getting even more censored, and he's being, I don't even think Alex Jones can open a checking account right now. He's being so unpersoned, and everybody mocks what a danger he is. Well, I haven't been listening to Alex Jones' show for a while, but I bet you he's all over the Venezuela thing. So it's a real mindfuck where these people who are these alternative sources who live on the internet and aren't a part of the mainstream, they're talking about what actually matters, and the Wall Street Journal is doing nothing on this, or next to nothing. So it's a real weird time. You know, I remember when I was on SE Cup Show, when I was a contributor over there, and I always felt that, you know, this is just me speculating because she never said this to me, but I always just kind of felt like we would argue on the show and then we'd argue off air and like talk about these things all the time. And I would point to these things that were just huge holes in her point of view, you know, like on the Syria issue specifically, because that was like her big issue.
You gotta do something, Dave.
Well, right.
Why don't you do nothing?
But her issue was that the
chemical weapons.
Well, it's that, but it was that, you know, Assad's a madman. He's killing his own people, so we have to go intervene because Assad's killing his own people. Like, that's the only reason we're there, because he's killing his people. And I'd be like, yeah, but SE, I mean, like, look, here's a report of talk of regime change in Syria in 2007, in 2008. Was he killing his own people then? This is 6 years before he started killing people, right? So why was regime change already on the table there? Or I would be like, look, this is when the CIA went in, or look, we armed ISIS. We are the ones who started this whole civil war and then escalated it at every single step. Here's John Kerry on tape talking about it. You know, like there's all these things, and there'd be these huge holes. But overall, I just thought there was something where, and she never said this to me. This was just like a feeling that I had, was that it's like, look, Essie Cupp is talking to like what Scott Horton is to me, or like what Daniel McAdams or some of these guys who I get my foreign policy like news from, like I get, you know, the people who really educate me on the subject. Her version of that is like Dick Cheney's chief of staff, three former members of the CIA, like really, you know, like credentialized, important people. And so even if I make a good point, I just feel like there's this feeling of like, all right, Dave, I don't think the fucking right-hand man to the vice president and the head of the RAND Institute and all these other things, like they're wrong, but you've figured this whole thing out. Probably I'm going to go with all these guys, you know? And I get that. There is something about that that makes a lot of sense, because of course, how ridiculous would it be to think that I've figured this out, but the fucking vice president didn't? You know what I mean? It's just, this is insane. But that's how insane things are, is that I'm actually right and all of those establishment people are wrong. And it's not me. It's just that I'm reading the right people and I'm a comedian. So my job is kind of to like poke at the absurdities in the way our society is. Now, I also do think that someone like in Essie Cupp's position should have, you know, she should have, at least at this point, figured out like, oh yeah, you know what? It does seem like the CIA gets things wrong quite a bit. Like they seem to be getting like every single prediction wrong. And
you're questioning our intelligence community?
Yes, I am actually.
That almost sounds treasonous.
Yeah, it is. Look at that. I just committed treason right here. According to Brennan, I just committed treason. But anyway, so on that same theme, it's interesting where a show like ours would be talking all about this attempted coup the other day in Venezuela that did fail, just as Scott predicted it would. And
what happened to the coups?
I think they're still at large, but they just basically got completely held off. I'm sure some of them died, but I don't know.
Did they ever have a chance?
I don't think so.
Did they? Was it like
in hindsight? It seems obvious they didn't. It seems like they had nothing.
Did they think like, you know, all the hungry people were going to come out and be like, yeah, fuck? Is it Maduro? Is that the guy's name?
Maduro's the current leader. There's basically two theories that I have on it, and we discussed them with Scott, but just to run over them quickly, and to me it seems like it has to be one of these two things. Either Bolton got played, and basically there were people...
Oh, they said that there was going to be support, and then there wasn't support.
There were people
the
who were still loyal to Maduro who were telling them they were all going to switch over, so move now, we're ready to do it, just so they could have it and then squash it and shut it down. Or the other possibility is that Bolton and Pompeo are playing Trump and they know exactly what's going to happen right now. And they feel like if we get him to side with the coup, then the coup fails. Then it's easy to go, well, now you got to send in the Marines. My guess is that it's one of those two things. Either one to me seems plausible. But I don't know. We'll see what Trump does. It's very obvious right now that
Bolton versus Maduro, battle of the stashes.
Yes, that's right. But Bolton and Pompeo want this war. Trump seems to be hesitant. But we'll see. We'll see what ends up happening.
Do you think if you give Bolton the choice, hey man, you get to have one war, but you only get one. Like, you know, like that thing when your grandfather took you for toys or whatever? Mm-hmm. Buy one.
Yes.
Which one's he taking?
I think Iran.
Yeah.
That would be my guess.
That's the gold mine for
Bolton him. Really wants Iran. Like, don't get me wrong, you know, it's like there's some Venezuela is a real cool toy.
Right.
You know, like Russia's the one I think he really wants, but that's like, we can't afford.
Right.
Like, even your grandfather.
Even he gets it.
Would be like, no, I wasn't saying you could buy like a fucking thousand.
Right. We're not buying
thing.
The store. We're
yes,
here for
exactly.
a single item.
Exactly.
We're not buying
yes.
all of Toys R Us.
Right. Exactly.
You got
to
pick one
so
item.
If he had to pick one item, I think it would be Iran.
Yeah.
And he'd be like, okay, you can have your Iran. And it would be like, I bought you Iraq a few years ago, and you treated that like shit. So you better treat your Iran good, okay? Because that Iraq is a mess. It's just collecting dust in the corner right now. He goes, and I bought you a Libya. You don't even play with Libya anymore. It's just a room full of destroyed nations in John Bolton's fucking closet. But but Venezuela right now seems to be the one that they think they've got their eyes set on. But Iran as well. I mean, they're still flirting with war there too. But anyway, we'll see what happens with that. But that's the world where this gets very little coverage in the mainstream media. It's this huge event. It could be the next Vietnam, the next Iraq war. We're flirting with this. I'm not saying it will be, but we're flirting. We're openly musing about whether we should have another Vietnam or another Iraq war. You would think, you know, that this would be something the media would cover. Instead, they've been covering this, the breaking news that Mueller wasn't happy with Bill Barr's summary of his report. Now, I got to say, I really am, as I continue to be, since this all unfolded, and it's just amazing. It's like, I guess I've lived through a few of these things. I mean, I remember when the war in Iraq went so bad, and it was, when even George W. Bush had to come out and put his tail between his legs and say there were no weapons of mass destruction. We were wrong. And basically all the neocons, I mean, I don't remember if you remember the list of predictions, but it was like they said, and I'm not making any of these up, these are all direct quotes. These are direct neocon quotes. On the question of whether Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, it was a quote, slam dunk. They said that the war would be a, quote, cakewalk. They said that we would be, quote, greeted as liberators. Let that one sink
you
in.
You sold
for
me
a little
cake,
bit.
Buddy. Yeah. We're good. I'm in.
That's right.
Let's go get that
That's
cake.
That's how easy it was to convince Rob to go along with the war. We'd be greeted as liberators. And then the other promise that I remember was, quote, the war will be paid for in oil. So trillions of dollars later, still not exactly being greeted as liberators. We're still in this cakewalk. And oh, by the way, the slam dunk was not a slam dunk. It actually turns out it was a blown layup. There was no weapons of mass destruction. Oh, and the other one, the best probably of all, the one that over time has been proven to be the most profoundly wrong, was that after Saddam is overthrown, democracy will sweep the region. And it will have this you know, peaceful effect on all the neighboring countries. So it will be a stabilizing force for not just Iraq, but for all the countries around Iraq. Now, if one was really wrong, that was probably the worst of all of them because it completely destabilized the region.
I think it's just we didn't commit troops there for long enough. That's what went wrong.
Well, that is the
problem. If we had been fully committed, we could have done it.
So you get to this point around 2004, 2005, where all of this has come out, that all of these things were wrong, and not just wrong, but you know, it was the exact opposite of everything they said. It's a disaster. It's a quagmire. Our troops are dying. Iraqis are being slaughtered by the hundreds of thousands already at this point. It's crazy expensive. Death and destruction everywhere. No weapons of mass destruction. We're not being greeted as liberators. Turns out they hate us. Turns out that nobody, as Scott Horton said in the last episode, which I think was a great comment, he goes, nobody could possibly be stupid enough to believe that America starts a war for the good of the people of the country it's invading other than an American. No one else in the world actually believes that. So we weren't greeted as liberators. This is all falling apart. And I remember people who wanted the war to end, and I was one of those people. Even before I found Ron Paul and stuff like that, I was like, this war is just horrible. It should end. Well, they were like, well, now we're going to have to end this war. And then the Bush-Cheney administration came out and said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to surge. We're going to send way more troops in.
Yeah.
We're doubling down on the policy. And you're like, it's this amazing thing where it's like, how can you be proven so wrong and then just double down on what you started with? The initial policy claim was we need to send troops into Iraq. And now, after we were wrong about everything, well, we need more troops in Iraq. You know, but this has happened over and over and over again. This happened with the financial crisis, basically. Well, you know, it's like these low interest rates and debt and overregulation led to this crash. Well, what do we need? More of all three. But it never ceases to amaze me. And with this whole Mueller report, it's so obvious. Everything you said has been proven wrong, and none of them it's not even like they take one step backward. They take three steps forward. They're leaning right into it. And it is unbelievable. I mean, they are, I don't even think they're grasping at straws anymore. They're grasping at little fragments of straws. It's the idea that they're now trying to, it's as if no one was saying Trump-Russia collusion. That, what are you talking about? Where did you hear that? No one was saying anything about Trump-Russia collusion. That wasn't our position. No. What we were saying is, you know, first it's like we were saying obstruction. Now it's like we were saying that Bill Barr misrepresented the report. Here's the straw that they're grasping at now. This is the most absurd thing I've ever heard in my life. They're saying that the Attorney General, Bill Barr, misrepresented the Mueller report, which he released 2 weeks later.
Well, that was a dark 2 weeks in this country.
That's right.
I don't know if you remember, Dave Smith, but things really went off the rails for 2 weeks.
For 2 weeks, we weren't calling Donald Trump a traitor to the country. I mean, that's really their problem with it. So Mueller wrote a letter to Attorney General Bill Barr, and he said...
Which is already suspicious. What, are you breaking up with him or something?
Yeah,
who's writing
weird.
A letter? What are you doing?
So you're going to break up with Bill Barr. Come do it to his face.
Yeah, you can't send an email, a text, be a dude. What the
so he
letter?
Wrote, yeah, he wrote him a letter, like he was upset with him in the 1940s.
Yeah.
Wrote him a letter. And he basically said that he wasn't happy with his summary, and that he would rather he release Mueller's summary, his two-page summary of the 400-something page report that he found. That he submitted. And Bill Barr had nothing to do with this. He goes, this whole thing's stupid. So Bill Barr released Mueller's summary with the report 2 weeks later. And not only to Congress, but to the American people. It's up. You can go find it. The PDF file is online all over the place. It's being printed and bought and distributed. It's all over the place. You can find it. But so the huge thing now is that he didn't, you know, Mueller was upset and he didn't release what he wanted him to. Now, there's something very interesting and revealing in the letter that Mueller writes to Bob Barr. I know you had a tweet about this that I thought was really great. Why don't you just
can we pull
the
up?
Point?
I don't remember the language off the top of my head.
Do you have it in front of you?
You
got a computer in front
point.
Of you. I don't.
Well, you know,
my computer's up here, Robbie Bernstein. And there's not that much information in it, so if you could use your actual computer, that would be better.
Great.
But why don't you, while you're pulling it up, just tell them more or less what your point of your tweet was, because I retweeted it. I thought it was an excellent point.
Okay, so the entire basis for why they had to have the congressional hearing was that Mueller disagreed with Barr. But what he disagreed with him on was that he said that that Barr's summary of the report did not fully, I think, capture. I think the word was fully capture. It didn't fully capture what was in the report. But that's a ridiculous standard, because how can a two-page document fully capture what's in a 400-page document? There's nothing that's ever going to fully capture. If you put
those
terms fully capture, you now have something that's an impossible standard. Nothing will, what I wrote was, I spent 3 weeks in Paris. I still couldn't fully capture the experience of the city. So the point is, when you put the words fully capture,
other one you said was, I love the Lord of the Rings movies, but they didn't fully capture the book.
Yeah.
And it's like, right, well, it's the standard that you're setting is literally impossible.
Yes.
It's impossible to do.
Yes.
There is no way you can fully capture 400 pages in 2 pages. So what the Attorney General Barr did was try to lay out what he thought were the most important findings of the investigation.
But here's the most annoying point. So then they have an entire hearing where they go, you disagreed with Mueller. Well, can we define in what way I disagreed with Mueller? Can we define in what way there's a contradiction that we need an entire hearing here as if I've done something wrong? Like, what is the contradiction between the two of us? Let's define terms here. Because according to that standard, nothing ever isn't in contradiction.
According to that standard, unless he wrote a 400-page summary.
Duplicate.
Duplicate. Then it right. Just every word. Here it is. So the thing that I find interesting is that then the Attorney General, Bill Barr, and Mueller get on the phone. And Barr asks him flat out, he goes, did you think there was anything I said that was inaccurate? And Mueller says, no. So there's nothing that he said that was inaccurate. What Mueller said his concern was more about the media reporting of his summary. Now, this, to me, I thought was shocking.
So it sounds to me like he's politicizing himself.
Well, that's right.
So this wasn't just about a Russia collusion.
So let me get this straight. After the Attorney General Barr says that there was no evidence of collusion, conspiracy, or coordination, and there was no obstruction of justice, you're very upset because the media's reporting on that, and you're like, no. What I actually said was there was no evidence of collusion, cooperation, or conspiracy, and I don't know about obstruction of justice. Maybe there was, maybe there wasn't. That's what your report said, but he's saying there's no obstruction of justice. And he's saying the president fully cooperated, and you're like, well, he partially cooperated. So the fact that that was being reported the wrong way, this was a big problem for you. Yet for 2 years, when you knew more than any other human being on the planet knew that this was complete bullshit, when the media was reporting that Donald Trump was a traitor to his country, guilty of treason, and a puppet of the Russians, that didn't bother you.
No, he wasn't concerned about the media.
Right. That's not his role anymore.
That's not his job. So, was never to be concerned with the media.
It seems like Mueller's problem here is that while he's not recommending to indict Donald Trump on anything, and he didn't recommend to indict anyone on anything having to do with anything that happened before the election that wasn't like some financial crime from way before the election having nothing to do with the Trump administration at all. His problem is that you didn't trash Trump at all. You didn't give the media any red meat to keep trashing Donald Trump. To me, this was the, if there was ever any suspicion that Mueller was what people were claiming he is, Mueller's this great by the books man of integrity and principles, and he's just going to go in there and do his job and represent the people, that has been smashed to smithereens. This guy is a political actor, just like the vast majority of the higher-ups of the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, all those guys. Now, the other element that's kind of interesting, and you sent me a Wall Street Journal article that was talking about this, and this is something that I've mentioned on the show before, but I think that a big part of this whole Trump-Russia investigation and this whole thing. Well, I think, like I said, number one was this was to pin Trump in and not allow him to do what he ran on, to end these wars. Like Donald Trump in the campaign said, wouldn't it be nice if we could work with the Russians, get out of Syria, stop spending all this money, which, by the way, stop spending all this money means AKA dry up the military-industrial complex gravy train. That's what the money is spent on, right? So we could stop spending all this money. We could work with Russia, have detente with Russia, and not fight in these stupid wars that do nothing but waste money and destroy nations and get a bunch of our and other people killed. So that was what he was running on. Now, if for 2 years, every day in the media, they're saying that you're in bed with the Russians, makes it kind of hard to work with the Russians. And every time, and if you just look at when the media would go to its highest level of just insanity, it would be when Donald Trump said anything nice about Putin. If he ever complimented Putin, it was like, oh, look at him. He's praising Putin. Look at him. What does Stephen Colbert say? He's a cock holster for Putin. He's the fuck, like these weird things that you would think the left comedians aren't supposed to say, like cock holster. Isn't that kind of like a fucking homophobic slur? But whatever. You know, I think it's a great term, but I'm just saying that doesn't seem like they're supposed to think it's a great term. But so that's when they would go their craziest, and they put all this pressure, and it worked. It made him more and more adversarial with Russia because he didn't want to seem like, you know, he was in bed with them. Which maybe that's a homophobic slur too. I don't know. Anyway, the point is, that was a big part of it, was that I think they saw Donald Trump as this wild man who was not controllable and could maybe turn on the military-industrial complex and end the gravy train. But I think also a big part of it is that there were real people who committed serious crimes who Donald Trump was a threat to. And it doesn't surprise me that people like Clapper and Bolden are, Clapper and Brennan are coming out in the media just relentlessly trashing Donald Trump, pushing this Russia, hoax, pushing this bullshit, this complete nonsense that Donald Trump is working for the Russians. I mean, Clapper is a guy who lied to Congress about an illegal spying program, and Brennan is a guy who, you know, actually committed treason and was in bed with Al-Qaeda and ISIS. It seems like there's something there. Now, what's going on with Barr? It's not exactly clear to me. Barr is a Bush guy. Barr is a guy who worked for George H.W. Bush, who contributed to the campaign of Jeb Bush. He's not exactly a Trumpian. You know, he's not like a Trump fanboy. But I think, I'm starting to think that what's going on with Bill Barr is that he is, he's a Justice Department guy who's been the head of the Justice Department on two different occasions, who's been in there his whole life, kind of knows the inner workings of the scene, and he doesn't like what they're doing. Like, it seems more and more like his thing, it's not what the media is telling you. The media is telling you it's like, oh, he's just, you know, he's sold his soul for Donald Trump. He's basically Donald Trump's slave. He'll do whatever he wants. He's just, they keep saying this thing in the mainstream media where they'll go, this is an attorney general who was handpicked. And it's like, well, you could just say this is an attorney general because they're all handpicked. That's how attorney generals get their job. They're appointed by the president. That's always been true. So, okay, maybe there's a problem with that system, but that's true for every single attorney general. That's not new for this guy. They say it like it's something about him. This don't forget, you know, this was a hand-picked attorney general.
I like
general.
That standard. Let's have no more unelected officials.
Yeah,
never
right.
Have to deal with the Kissinger again.
Right,
let's do
exactly.
That. Never Timothy Geithner. Never a guy at the Federal Reserve. These fucking people at the
Well,
Supreme
that's right.
Court.
I mean, the
Let's
Federal
get rid of
Reserve.
All of them.
Well, it is.
Let's vote on all of them. Let's put it in the hands of the idiots.
But by the way, that's a great example you say right there, because anytime anyone with any inkling toward, oh, maybe we should be on a gold standard, or maybe the Federal Reserve does too much, or maybe they keep interest rates too low, or anyone who even hints in the direction that we'd like, they go, we have to maintain the independence of the Fed. But wait a minute. Every Fed chairman is handpicked.
Every one of them.
That, right. So what is this? All of a sudden, this guy is a handpicked attorney general. But so what they're saying is basically, oh, and you've heard this, by the way, it's really amazing to me. Just a quick aside that the candidates running for Democrat, they seem to all repeat talking points to a T. And Democrats in general, it's like you guys like, look, when the talking points get sent out to you. Next time, just a word of advice to try to help my enemy. How about you just put at the bottom of the talking points, put this into your own words. Don't repeat verbatim, because you guys are starting to sound like robots. With the exception of Bernie Sanders, everyone, and of course Tulsi Gabbard, every one of the Democratic candidates and every Democrat in general, they say the exact same thing. And this happens over and over and over again. When Trump declared that, go Tucker Carlson runs some clips about this stuff. I think Hannity does as well. But go look at like when Trump declared the state of emergency on the border. Go look at how many people use the term manufactured crisis. Every single one of them. This is a manufactured crisis. This is a manufactured crisis. Okay, so the term that everybody's been using with Attorney General Barr, the term everybody's been using is he's acting like the president's lawyer. That's everybody's term. They are all saying it. You're working on behalf of Donald Trump, not the Justice Department. So that's their talking point. Oh, he's just working on behalf of Donald Trump. Seems to me that what's actually going on here is that he's critical of what the deep state did to a guy who's running for president. Now, this happens every now and then in these positions where there'll be somebody who actually believes the hype. Like, maybe they don't completely, you know, I always say, like, the state is the mafia masquerading as a human rights organization. Well, they kind of know it's a little mafia-esque, but they still kind of believe the human rights organization part. They're like, well, we're a human rights organization that just has to act like a mafia a little bit, but we're not just the mafia pretending to be a human rights organization. So they kind of believe, like, well, this is America, and we have a constitution, and, you know, the president is duly elected, and the president blah, 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 you know? All men are created equal and something like that, you know? So I think what's going on is that the attorney general is like, yeah, this is not okay. What you had were these deep state figures who hate the president spying on him because they hate him. Not for any legitimate reason, because he said in his first testimony in Congress, not this last one, that he was like, yeah, the president was spied on. And he said, you know what? We're going to look into whether that was done the right way or not. And this is what's generating all of the hate against him. It's not anything about his summary being wrong. It's not anything about him working for Donald Trump. It's the fact that he's a threat to these people. And now all of the anger, all of the laser focus rage is turned on Barr. He's dealing with all of it. He should step down. He should be removed from his office. Blah, 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 blah. It's all this stuff. And why is this? Well, part of it is the obvious, you know, political reason. Trump got off. The Mueller report didn't deliver the way they wanted it to. You know, that's just what happened. But part of it, so, you know, you blame somebody for that's why it's because the attorney general covered it up or something like that. But part of it is that I think a lot of these people realize that they committed very, very serious crimes. And it's kind of like going after the president of the United States and missing. You know, it's like, you know, when they say if you swat a bee, you better kill it. Because you don't kill it, you might get stung. And going against the president of the United States and missing like this, you could get yourself in some trouble. And if you've committed very, very serious crimes, which a whole lot of these people have, by the way, I'm running off the crimes, and this is something you always got to keep in mind when you're talking about the deep state. I'm running off the crimes that we know of. Imagine what we don't know that the CIA's done. I mean, if all the details really came out about this, the spying on Donald Trump, imagine how many people in there have committed very serious crimes. It's quite possibly a whole lot of them. And now the idea that you got an attorney general who's saying, we're looking into you next, that guy's got to be publicly tarred and feathered now. So that's what's happening. And it's just the grilling at his congressional testimony. I mean, it was just ridiculous. It was literally ridiculous. You wanted to play the Kamala Harris clip right now. She's trying to make a name for herself because she's running for president on the platform of I'm a black woman.
No, she's trying to run the card with, hey, I'm an even nastier bitch than Hillary.
Yeah.
She's and like, you know that Hillary that you liked? I'm even worse.
Yeah.
Forget about her.
And the problem, Kamala, is that no one's a nastier bitch than Hillary Clinton. You just can't win that one.
Firstly, step one, you got to fatten up those thighs. It comes from the bottom. It's like a boxer. You got to build up those legs kind of thing.
Yeah, we sure do. All right. Let's play Kamala Harris.
Mr. Chairman, Attorney General Barr, has the president or anyone at the White House ever asked or suggested that you open an investigation of anyone?
I wouldn't.
Was this the video I loaded? I feel like this was... How long is this? 8:12? All right, I guess I'm right. I thought this was like already midway in.
I will repeat it. Yeah. Has the president or anyone at the White House ever asked or suggested that you open an investigation of anyone? Yes or no, please, sir.
The president or anybody else.
Seems you would remember something like that and be able to tell us.
Yeah, but I'm trying to grapple with the word suggest. I mean, there have been discussions of matters out there that they have not asked me to open an investigation. But
perhaps they've suggested.
I don't know. I wouldn't say suggest.
Hinted?
I don't know.
Inferred? You don't know. Okay. In your March 24th summary,
which, by the way, is what they're most
that-
concerned about.
No, isn't that an interesting question that he's – look, I will be honest. He seems uncomfortable with giving a full answer on that. He's like, oh, I didn't ask. I don't know if that suggested. But what's she concerned with? Have they asked you to investigate anyone? Well, why would you be so scared about that?
Also, the idea after running this investigation that asking a government agency to look into if there's, you know, not fair play with like that's wrong.
Yeah.
Like they're almost trying to paint that as being treasonous, where they're like, hey, was there something that wasn't supposed to be going on here? Let's run an investigation.
Right.
Like, how dare you run an investigation? Whereas if you remember the start of this whole Russia thing and they pitch it on, well, we just want to investigate.
That's right.
We just want some answers here.
Did anyone ask you to open an investigation? I mean, those things are witch hunts.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep playing.
Quote, after reviewing the special counsel's final report.
But I will say that no one.
Sir, I'm asking a question. In your March 24th summary, you wrote that, quote, after reviewing the special counsel's final report, Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein and I have concluded that the evidence is not sufficient to establish that the president committed an obstruction of justice offense. Now, the special counsel's investigation produced a great deal of evidence. I'm led to believe it included witnesses' notes and emails, witnesses' congressional testimony, witnesses' interviews, which were summarized in the FBI 302 forms, former FBI Director Comey's memos, and the president's public statements. My question is, in reaching your conclusion, did you personally review all of the underlying evidence?
No, we took and accepted
Mr. Rosenstein?
No, we accepted the statements in the report as the factual record. We did not go underneath it to see whether or not they were accurate. We accepted it as accurate.
The report as the evidence?
Yes.
You did not question or look at the underlying evidence that supports the conclusions in the report?
No.
All right, so can we pause it for a second?
Sure.
The question itself makes no sense. Why would you spend 2 years... hire who you say is the best investigator, spend, what was the cost of this?
I think $30 to $35 million.
So you spend $30 million having the world's best investigator look into the evidence and then present the evidence. Why would you then hire another person to do the exact same job?
Yeah, really. It's like,
I mean, that's government at its best. So wait a second. So we paid $30 million and now shouldn't we be paying you $30 million to spend 2 years and do the exact same thing?
It makes absolutely no sense. It's like, well, you do realize that the special counsel works for the Justice Department, right? And he's the head of the Justice Department. So no, this is the guy he had investigating. It's separate. It's a special counsel, so it's supposed to be like, you know, like they do their own thing, so it's impartial. But like, by the way, what's her problem with him not seeing the underlying evidence? I mean, this is just a question to sound good that falls completely apart under any scrutiny. I'm trying to think of like an analogy of it, but it would be almost like if I don't know, like if Lewis hired someone to clean the bathrooms here, and then he was like, "And did you go and scrub over every spot that they scrubbed to make sure it was clean?" And you're like, "No, that's what I hired her to do. That's the point." So anyway, let's keep going.
Did Mr. Rosenstein review the evidence that underlines
and
supports the conclusions in the report, to your knowledge?
Not to my knowledge. We accepted the statements in the report.
Did anyone
the characterization of the evidence is true.
Did anyone in your executive office review the evidence supporting the report?
No.
No. Yet you represented to the American public that the evidence was not, quote, sufficient to support an obstruction of justice
The evidence presented in the report. This is not a mysterious process. In the Department of Justice, we have PROS memos and declination memos every day coming up. And we don't go and look at the underlying evidence.
Would you support
the characterization of the evidence as true?
As the Attorney General of the United States, you run the United States Department of Justice. If in any U.S. Attorney's office around the country, the head of that office, when being asked to make a critical decision about, in this case, the person who holds the highest office in the land, and whether or not that person committed a crime, would you accept them recommending a charging decision to you if they had not reviewed the evidence?
So can you pause for a second? You got to, okay. So the answer is yes. If you're the head, let's say you're a head DA, and one of your prosecutors comes to you and goes, hey, I just spent 2 years on this and I don't have enough evidence. I don't think we're going to move forward. You're going to go, all right, we're good. We're not moving forward. If they come to you and go, hey, there's enough here and I think we could prosecute, then that's when your track record plugs in. You're like, okay, well then let's just do a double check here because I don't want the strike against my record if you're completely wrong.
That's exactly right. I mean, like, just think about it. If you were like, if somebody was like, I don't know, the cops told a prosecutor, they were like, oh no, this guy isn't the guy, and they go, oh okay, well then we're not going to press any charges against him, and they go, really, did you go out and start doing police work yourself? Like, what? No.
Right,
they're telling us that there isn't evidence here to prosecute. What evidence would you have me go over? Now, yes, like you said, that she's flipping it around. Maybe if you were going to prosecute somebody, there would be an onus to be like, okay, make sure you really have your ducks in a row. I mean, you're the head, this kind of falls on you. But yes, this is just insane. And really, the only person, like, I don't think she's trying to just throw a Barr under the bus, but her attack here is really on Mueller. Because he's saying I took his findings as fact. So anyway, I guess 30 million wasn't huge. We need another 30 million for Barr to go run his own parallel investigation. Let's keep playing.
Bob Mueller, he's the U.S. attorney. He's the one who presents the report.
But it was you who made the charging decision, sir.
What?
You made the decision not to charge the president.
No, in a press memo. And in a declination memo.
You said it was your baby. What did you mean by that?
It was my baby to decide whether or not to disclose it to the public.
And whose decision was it? Who had the power to make the decision about whether or not the evidence was sufficient to make a determination of whether there had been an obstruction of justice?
Prosecution memos go up to the supervisor. In this case, it was the attorney general and the deputy attorney general who decide on the final decision. And that is based on the memo as presented by the U.S. Attorney's Office.
I think you've made it clear that you've not looked at the evidence. We can move on. I think you've made it clear, sir, that you've not looked at the evidence, and we can move on.
But he did make it clear. Yes, you're right. He did make it clear. He was like, no, I didn't.
And just so you know, they were also playing this up in the media as this being the I got you moment.
Yes.
Kamala Harris also then tweeted, hey, it's very clear that Barr is really just working for Trump and not for the American people. Please retweet this if you think he should be removed from his post.
Hey,
this was the I got you moment.
No, you're right. Hey, do me a favor, Tanner. Can you just pull up real quick Ted Cruz, Bill Barr? Because it was actually pretty great what Ted Cruz, when he just started breaking it down. Yes, this was their big I got you moment, that he took the Mueller investigation as fact.
The other thing that they make no mention of is, from my recollection, Bill Barr was not there for the entire process.
No, he wasn't.
He was there as of, what, a month ago, 2 months ago?
A little more than that, but he was only there for very recent, for the very end of it. Yeah. No, it was Jeff Sessions who had recused himself. And none of them had a problem with that, by the way. They were all thrilled that Jeff Sessions recused himself from it. So, yeah.
Right, they didn't pull him in to go, well, as the head of the department, does that mean you're not looking over all of the evidence?
No, because the truth is that if Jeff Sessions hadn't have recused himself, there'd be no special prosecutor. So they were thrilled when they got their special prosecutor, specifically because the attorney general was removing himself.
What kind of blackmail did they have on him that they got him to recuse himself? What was the threat? Who did it come from? Just throw it out of your ass. Who the fuck knows? But if you had to guess, who sits down with him and goes, listen, Mr. Sessions, congratulations on your new job. Here's how this is going to play out. We're running this thing. We need you to step aside. What do you think the threat is?
Look, I have no idea.
That happened.
Okay, here's, if you want me to really go off into conspiracy land, okay?
Put on your tinfoil hat.
So let me just give you a little aside, okay?
Yeah.
So Barney Frank is a longtime congressman. Flamingly gay dude. He got caught running a gay prostitution ring out of his home. Out of his home, running a gay prostitution ring. Now, what he'll say, like the official story, is that a guy who he lived with was running a gay prostitution story out of it. Yeah.
He's a congressman with a roommate.
A gay dude with a roommate. You know what
I
mean?
He's like me. He's spending all of his savings on sandwiches. He can't afford to live without a roommate.
Exactly,
I get it.
Exactly. Same thing. And just as gay.
Yeah.
And he... So it was like... The story was like, well, the guy who rents the bottom floor of my house, who I've known for years, you know... was running a gay prostitution ring. But anyway, this came up, and he got off scot-free, and there was nothing. And what was basically what the rumor was that Barney Frank had a lot of dirt on a lot of people, and nobody wanted to fucking make a big thing out of it because he would bring a lot of people down with him. I suspect that basically anybody who rises up to a very high level in Congress and in general in the government are almost always compromised in some way. People have dirt on them. And then people love someone you have a lot of dirt on because you can control them. And Jeff Sessions is a guy who was a career politician, a senator for decades. He was really one of the like big guys. And then his attorney general, I don't know what happened there, but there's lots of people who probably had dirt on him. There's lots of people, you know, Jeff Sessions. Ever take a long, hard look at Jeff Sessions? Ever listen to him talk for a while? Wouldn't be surprised if Jeff Sessions has stopped by Barney Frank's house a few times. That's all I'm saying. You know, Lindsey Graham might have been there too.
Both bottoms, clearly. Those guys are just taking it.
Oh, yeah.
They're not going and giving it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. These guys may have even stopped by Mayor Pete Buttstuff's house a couple times. I don't know for sure. But I mean, that's just, I'm kind of speaking out of my ass here. I don't know exactly what happened. Look, I mean, I guess on the surface level, you could just say, well, look, they were accusing him of being a Russian asset as well. And maybe he wanted to prove that he wasn't. But look, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of these guys, I think there's dirt on them. Look, think about the fact that, you know, if you cover these guys, and I know, by the way, if you're not someone who listens all the time, or if you're just, you might listen to that and be like, wow, Dave's really just speculating and reaching and who the fuck knows. And I acknowledge I am speculating on this. But when you think about who these people are, who are these people? And these are people who, you know, Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was the Secretary of State under Carter, he bragged. Now, I don't even know if this is true or not, but he bragged that basically that the United States of America lured the Soviet Union into Afghanistan. He's like, you know, a lot of people think in 1980, the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan, and then we went in there and started arming the Mujahideen, you know, the people who turned out to be Al-Qaeda later. We started arming them after. He goes, but what really happened was we lured the Soviets into Afghanistan because we wanted to give them their own Vietnam. Now imagine the worldview that you have to have. Imagine the type of person you have to be like, we think it's in our best geopolitical strategy to create another Vietnam. Like, fuck the people of Afghanistan. They just got to be the Vietnamese in this scenario. But we think this will bleed. We saw what Vietnam did to America, just bled us dry, depleted our military, undermined our culture at home, turned people against their own government. We're going to give that to the Soviet Union. And by the way, in order to do it, we got to arm Osama bin Laden and train him and his team on how to fucking lure a superpower in and fight them and guerrilla warfare and all this shit. But just think about who... Like any normal, decent human being, what's your immediate thought if that type of proposition came up? You'd be like, well, I can't start a war for some theoretical goal in the future, you know? And I've heard a whole bunch of these war hawks asked about the arming of the Mujahideen. Because after 9/11, it was kind of hard to not be like, you know, it's public knowledge that we funded, armed and trained Al-Qaeda. And then 9/11 happened. And, you know, a lot of people were like, yeah, no, was that maybe a mistake? And I've heard several of them straight up say, no, it's Soviet Union collapsed. So it's not even just those people over there got to die. It's like a few thousand of us got to die too. That's fine too. This distinction between over there and over here is just, that's for you guys. That's for you plebs. That's not what the fucking elite, that's not how they think of it. It's you, human beings to them are pawns on a chessboard that they can move around. This is real sociopathic mentality. Think about the fact that Hillary Clinton is married to a sexual predator. And her best friend, Uma Abedin, is also married to a sexual predator. Is that a little weird? You know, it's hard to cover this shit and after a while start asking yourself, who are these people? Like, what the fuck? Like, these are sociopathic monsters who rise up to this level of government. That's what you're dealing with here. And when you're dealing with that type of person, you know, they usually have some dirt on them. They quite often have some things that they've done before. And a lot of times that's how people rise up to this level. What exactly are the details in each situation? I don't know. None of us really know. But it's hard to ignore the fact that, you know, in the same way that you're like, why have there been so many priests who turned out to be child molesters?
They just love cock.
Well, yeah, but why little boy cock?
It's in the Bible.
It's not.
Not the original Testament. My Bible wouldn't do that.
Oh, your
too.
Bible.
It's when you get to the New Testament, you really start getting into the... It's not like in the text. It's like very secret.
You gotta like... It's in, look at the it's commentary. In secret ink.
No, it's in the commentary. And if you get deep enough into it, all of a sudden, you start getting really into little boycock.
Like, even if you weren't to begin with, you read it. It turns like, you.
It's a matter of faith.
There's
And they'll tell you how much everyone doesn't want you to diddle little boycock, but it's...
But there's kind of like a wink. It's like, don't diddle little boycock.
No, that's God testing your faith. It's like, are you really into this thing? Well, go prove it. Society really doesn't want you to do that, but...
Well, look.
It's like Abraham when he sacrificed Isaac. You really...
It's like you're trying to... Oh, that's your book, though, bro. So you're putting all these new people.
No, but it's all on the same concept. God just really wants to test your faith. And what tests your faith more than doing the one thing that everybody hates, and that's sucking little boycock.
All right, listen. Once again, you're making a solid point. But I would maybe think the easier answer would just be that, well, priests work around children a lot. And it's a position of authority
and
over children.
And you get horny around kids. It happens to all of us. You got it. Like, I get it for like an hour. You can be responsible, but, you know,
like,
3, 4, 5 hours
like,
in.
Do I have any adult classes? Go, nope, all little boys today. Fuck. Fuck.
And I just taught them those new hymns. I'm sorry. I respect everybody's faith.
No, you don't. It's okay. You don't have to. But, you know, try to keep in mind, this is a Christian conservative podcast.
Right.
So, but look, it's the same reason why they find a lot of little league coaches who are fucking pedophiles, why you find teachers who are going after students. It's like, well, look, if you're prone, it's not that there, despite Rob's analysis, it's not that there's something about the job that makes you a pedophile. It's that if you are a pedophile, that's the job you're going to go take. Why do you think there's so many cops who fucking are like these power-hungry fucking pricks? Well, look, by the way, I'm not saying there's not any of it that is the power is corrupting, but a huge part of it, too, is that who goes into doing that? It's the guy who was bullied as a kid and didn't make the football team and wants to go fucking flex on some high schoolers today. That's who ends up getting lured. Not all of them, but a lot of those guys do get lured into that fucking position. Not all of them, just most of them. All right? And with the government, you got to think who gets lured into who. If you had a group of people and getting into government is not easy, like it takes a lot of hard work to win an election and to maintain, you know, power. Who are the people who are in government? Well, just factually, by the nature of what the institution is, it is the people who were most motivated to rule over other people. This is a net for authoritarian sociopaths. That's who you end up getting in these positions. And my evidence of that would be like all of human history. That's who you end up getting in these positions. The best person you've ever known, the person who's a really good dude who cares about other people, the fucking great mother, the people who don't make much money and still give to charity because they really care, the people who are like adopting children and doing all this good stuff. How much interest do they have in getting into politics? Just about none. How many good people get into politics? One, Ron Paul. That's it. That's the only one. And this kid is half good. But like, you know, I met Senator Mike Lee recently. He was a pretty cool guy. I like him too. Thomas Massey's good. But that's it. There's not too many. And then how many people are like, you know, war hawks and sociopaths? A ton of them. So this, just throwing that out there, I think it makes a lot of sense. Anyway, did you pull up the Ted Cruz part? All right, yeah, let's watch this, because this was actually, I found this pretty entertaining.
General Barr, thank you for your testimony. And let me start by just saying thank you. You've had an extraordinarily successful legal career.
Pause it for a second. Man, he just has the worst face. There may not be a worse face than Ted Cruz. It is, everything about his face is designed to make you not like Ted Cruz. Oh, that's mean. Mike Harrington? No, Mike's is better. All right, Brian, you make a good point. Look, let's stick with Ted Cruz here. Mike gets enough on fucking Believe You Me. It really is like, it's like designed to make you not like that guy. It's like this weaselly little. Anyway, sorry. I actually think he's doing a good job here and he makes a good thing. I can't with the face. Can we just play the video? I'm just going to thumb it out.
You didn't have to take this job.
Oh, okay.
You stepped forward and answered the call yet again, knowing full well
he's growing like the Civil
that you would be
here.
Subject to the kind of slanderous treatment, the Kavanaugh treatment that we have seen, of senators impugning your integrity. And I, for one, am grateful that you answered that call and are leading the Department of Justice both with integrity and fidelity to law. That is what the nation rightly expects of our Attorney General. And I believe you are performing that very ably. I think this hearing today has been quite revealing to anyone watching it, although perhaps not for the reason some of the Democratic senators intended. One thing that's revealing in the discussion and questions that came up, a word that occurred almost none at all is the word Russia. For 2.5 years, we heard Democratic senators going on and on and on about Russia collusion. We heard journalists going on and on and on about Russia collusion, alleging, among other things, some using extreme rhetoric, calling the president a traitor. We heard very little of that in this hearing today. Instead, the principal attack that Democratic senators have marshaled upon you concerns this March 27th letter from Robert Mueller. And it's an attack that I want people to understand just how revealing it is. If this is their whole argument, they ain't got nothing. So their argument is as follows. Let me see if I understand it correctly. You initially, when you received the Mueller report, released to Congress and the public a 4-page summary of the conclusions. Then on March 27th, Mr. Mueller asked you to release an additional 19 pages, the introduction and summary that he had drafted. And indeed, in the letter, what he says is, quote, I am requesting that you provide these materials to Congress and authorize their public release at this time. And the reason he says it is that to fully capture the context, nature, and substance of the office's work and conclusion. So you did not release those 19 pages at that time. Instead, a couple of weeks later, you released 448 pages, the entire report, which includes those 19 pages. Right. Do I have that timeline correct?
That's right.
So their entire argument is, General Barr, you suppressed the 19 pages that are entirely public, that we have, that we can read, that they know every word of it. And their complaint is it was delayed a few weeks. And that was because of your decision not to release the report piecemeal, but rather to release those 19 pages along with the entire 448 pages produced by the special counsel.
Yes.
If that is their argument, I have to say that is an exceptionally weak argument. Because if you're hiding something, I'll tell you right now, General Barr, you're doing a very lousy job of hiding it. Because the thing that they're suggesting you hid, you released to Congress and the American people. And so if anyone wants to know what's in those 19 pages that are being so breathlessly, oh, Bob Mueller said release the 19 pages. You did. You did it a couple of weeks later. But we can read every word of the 19 pages along with the full report. In your judgment, was the Mueller report thorough?
Yes.
Did they expend enormous time, energy, and resources investigating and producing that report?
Yes.
And the Mueller report concluded flat out on the question of Russian collusion, the evidence did not support criminal charges.
That's right.
And indeed, the Mueller report, if I have these stats right, was compiled by 19 lawyers who were on the team, approximately 40 FBI agents, intelligence analysts, forensic accountants, and professional staff. The special counsel issued more than 2,800 subpoenas, nearly 500 search warrants, more than 230 orders for communication records, almost 50 orders authorizing the use of pen registers, 13 requests to foreign government for evidence, and interviewed approximately 500 witnesses. Is that correct?
That's right.
So we have investigated over and over and over again, and the substance of the accusations that have been leveled at the president for 2.5 years have magically disappeared. Instead, the complaint is the 19 pages that we can all read that is entirely public could have been released a few weeks earlier. Oh, the calamity.
All right. You can pause it off there. Look.
Who's the fat Terminator guy?
I'd imagine it's an aide of some sort.
They should start wearing name tags. You know who the dumbasses standing behind the people are?
I would completely support a name tag policy for a congressional staff. I'm not the biggest Ted Cruz fan, but I really don't know how you argue with what he just said there. I thought he really summed it up perfectly. This is how I can't even call it grasping at straws. They're grasping at itty little bitty fragments of straws that they're going, Mueller asked you to release his 19-page summary. You just released your 4-page summary that he said, while it wasn't inaccurate, it didn't fully capture his investigation. It didn't give all of the context. And you didn't release the 19 pages for 2 more weeks. And then you released all of it. We all have it. It's public. Everybody's read it. So even if he didn't like the way the media was reporting on it, a couple weeks later, they got all of the information they need to report on it exactly the way you would want them to or hope that they did. I mean, keep in mind, this started with the sitting president is guilty of treason. And we're down to that. And is their attitude is not even like, well, look, we did overplay this a little bit. We were wrong, but we still think this is an issue. It's like none of that even exists. It's just this is an outrage. You didn't even look at the underlying evidence yourself. This is getting into goofy, sad territory. And I will say that, and a lot of people, man, the people who are the smart, honest, principled leftists, people like, like Glenn Greenwald and Jimmy Dore, and there's a bunch of them online. They are furious about this, because if you are a left-wing person and you think Trump is just terrible and all of his policies are bad and you need anyone in there except Trump, this is just, I mean, You have handed Trump a humongous victory on a silver platter. And I'm not a leftist. I certainly am no fan of the Democrats, but I'm no fan of Donald Trump's either. And so I don't enjoy them just handing him this victory. I think he should have to earn his victories. But this is it's cartoonish and ridiculous. I can't believe it's actually come to this level of grasping. All right. So I guess those are my thoughts on Bill Barr. And I guess next, with the remaining time we have here, we're going to turn to this week's Crazy Bitch Watch.
Yes.
Hey, y'all crazy bitch.
Oh, it's our favorite OG crazy bitch back in the spotlight. You know, there's a lot of crazy bitches out there, Rob, but there's one that's the closest to my heart, and that, of course, is Hillary Rodham Clinton, who appeared on the Rachel Maddow show. Rachel Maddow's has been having some trouble in her ratings. Rachel Maddow was probably the worst offender in the whole Trump-Russia collusion saga. She went all in on Trump is a Russian puppet. This is the biggest story ever. Trump is guilty of treason. She was, a lot of people said she was in tears. I would say she was very defeated sounding when the report first came out. And she needs to do something to get her ratings up. So, of course, she brought in the ratings machine. That is Hillary Rodham Clinton. That good work, by the way, Brian. I know I didn't tell you to get the crazy bitch watch ready, but for future notice, if I pull Hillary Clinton videos up, you should know that a crazy bitch drop is coming. But either way, you were very quick on it. I appreciate that. All right, let's play the first video that I had up, and this is Rachel Maddow Show, Hillary Rodham Clinton sitting in.
Back with us once again is Secretary of State, presidential nominee Hillary Clinton. Madam Secretary, thank you again for coming in to do this.
Glad to be here.
You have every option in the world, and I really appreciate you being here.
Only our country. I mean, after all.
Every option in the world. What the fuck is this lady doing? She's sitting around watching Bill Clinton have sex with kids. That's it. She's got nothing to do. And that's every day of her life, except for the other days when they bring in the children so she can suck her blood and, you know, stay in love or whatever.
Robbie.
The point is she's got nothing to do with her time.
Robbie, I mean, you completely missed the opening witty banter where she said, no problem, it's only our country. See, I look at things a little bit differently.
I know,
than
she
that.
Wants to come
See,
back
I
and
do
run,
think
and
that
she's practicing this line already of, I'm just coming back for the good of the country.
I still think there's a 30% chance Hillary Clinton tries to run. 0% chance her campaign does anything. But I think there's a 30%. This bitch is so power hungry, she might actually try it again. But here's the... See, I actually do kind of agree with Rachel Maddow, because she's saying you could have come anywhere. She's basically saying you could go on any show. And look, here's the truth. Any show would have her. Tucker Carlson would interview her in a second. Sean Hannity would interview her. Chris Matthews would interview her. Anyone you can think of who's a, you know, Don Lemon would be happy to interview her. Any journalist would give Hillary Clinton an interview. She's, you know, a Secretary of State and was the Democratic candidate. But what Rachel Maddow is saying is, hey, you could be anywhere and you chose to be here. It's like, yeah, exactly. She could be anywhere and she chose to be in the safest space where she won't get one challenging question and no one will even give you the slightest pushback on your bullshit.
If you're a lady, you want to be interviewed by another lady who looks more like a dude than you are. You look comparatively attractive. Everybody knows this.
Yeah.
First rule of politics.
To find a lady who looks more like a dude than Rachel Maddow, you'd have to go on the Chris Hayes show. All right. Let's see. Every time, by the way, if you look at Donald Trump, and as many of us have the feeling when you just see Donald Trump and you go, how the fuck did that guy become president? Then Hillary Clinton pops back up and you go, oh, yeah, that's how he became president. It was a choice between him or this monstrosity. All right, let's play a few minutes of Hillary Clinton.
I know, but this is just my little slice of it.
We're both pretending women are funny.
You've tried to really cover this story, and as we were just talking, it is far from over, and it is still going on, and that's what I worry about. I don't want it to happen again.
Yeah. And we're in the middle of figuring it out still.
We are.
I mean, I don't know when we're going to get Mueller's testimony, and I don't know how that's going to happen, but I feel like that's something that
So we're still in the middle of figuring this out yet, and I don't know when we're going to get Mueller's testimony. That's the thing now. Not the Mueller report. That came, and there's just not enough there, but now it's, when are we going to get Mueller's testimony? Now he's really got to come in. I actually feel bad for these guys. We're still, you know, Hillary Clinton said, you've been doing a great job trying to report on this. That is exactly how I would describe what Rachel Maddow is doing. She was trying to report on this. She wasn't reporting on it, but she was trying. Maybe not hard enough. All right, let's play.
I actually want to ask you about one sort of sidebar issue that came up in Mueller's report that has since been added to by the New York Times. It's about you. Mueller's report says that in October 2017, President Trump met privately with then-Attorney General Jeff Sessions and asked him to take a look at investigating Clinton. Then, this past week, the New York Times has reported that last spring, 2018, Trump also asked Don McGahn, his White House counsel, to get the Justice Department to investigate you and former FBI Director James Comey. Today, the Attorney General refused to answer questions as to whether the White House had ever directed him to initiate specific investigations. You're the only person in the country whose opinion I want to hear in response to those developments. Mm-hmm. What do you make of that?
Well, what I make of it is this is as big a sign of a guilty conscience or a real fear that you could possibly have. I mean, I'm living rent-free inside of Donald Trump's brain, and it's not a very nice place to be, I can tell you that. I don't know what they're talking about.
What the fuck does that mean, you Johnny Cash-dressed fat bitch? What does that mean? Literally, what is that? Can you replay that?
Yes. This is Hillary Clinton's. By the way, this line is totally off the cuff and not at all prepared. Hillary Clinton just thought of this. She's just so funny.
That's like a pro wrestling line written by like a drunk Bob Dylan
she, if this is possible, looks worse than ever. What's the evil lady who wants to make coats out of puppies and 101 Dalmatians?
Cruella DeVille.
What is it?
Cruella DeVille.
Cruella DeVille.
Like that.
Cruella.
Cruella. That's right. Cruella. She looks like Cruella DeVille. That's what she, I mean. You look at that. The hair looks pure. And did you hear the throat clearing?
Yeah.
At the beginning, she's still got this throat. Do you think somewhere there's a real person trapped inside Hillary Clinton's throat that's just trying to get
Jiminy
out?
Jiminy Cricket. It's her conscience is just living in there.
Maybe Hillary Clinton is actually a really good person who was just like inhabited by like an evil spirit, and somewhere in there she's fighting her way out, and then that's the evil spirit suppressing Hillary Clinton back every time.
Who's the actor who played Bill in Kill Bill from Kung Fu?
Oh, the guy who choked himself and masturbated himself to death.
That's what that haircut is right
David
there.
David Carradine.
David Carradine. Yeah. That's right. Yes.
He's got that David Carradine hair.
Yeah, that's not bad.
But who am I to shit on people for hair?
Yeah, and unfortunately, no one punches her in the heart and makes it explode. All right, let's play a little bit more.
Biggest sign of a guilty conscience or a real fear that you could possibly have. I mean, I'm living rent-free inside of Donald Trump's brain, and it's not a very nice place to be, I can tell you that. So I don't know what they're talking about.
Just pause it for a second. So, first off, no one lives in Donald Trump's property rent-free. We all know that. She goes, I'm living rent-free in Donald Trump's brain, and it's not a very nice place to be. Trust me. Like, is she suggesting she's actually there? Not just that Donald Trump is obsessed with her, but that she's actually coming from the perspective of living inside Donald Trump's hair or head, whatever. All right, let's get to one thing we can take.
I've been investigated repeatedly by the other side.
The other
side. And much to their dismay, but to my, satisfaction, it's been for naught. I testified for 11 hours in the Benghazi hearing after... What, seven committees said there was nothing there. This is a diversion attack. Look, it is very sad to me that the lies that were told about me, the accusations that were made about me, have unfortunately had some residue. People say, well, if she's going to be investigated so much and they're going to be saying all these terrible things, even though nothing ever happens, maybe there's something to it. Because I guess it is
Let's pause it one more time. Isn't that a terrible thing to do to a person, Hillary Clinton, to investigate them and then think there's some residue there that even though they didn't find anything, there must be something to it? Hillary Clinton says this unironically in a conversation with Rachel Maddow that started with her being like, we're still learning a lot. We're still figuring out what the Mueller report was. We still have to wait for him to testify, all this. Wasn't that just an amazing moment? By the way, if you want to just really puke, go listen to the rest of this interview with Hillary Clinton. But I did think that one moment was really something amazing. And she goes, it's just such a horrible thing to happen to you, to have the other side investigate you and then find out there's nothing there. By the way, the whole Benghazi hearing, I mean, forget Benghazi. The bigger picture was Libya, which was the war that Hillary Clinton pushed Barack Obama into. And it was every bit as disastrous as the Iraq war. Maybe not for our side, but certainly for that country it was. And for its broader implications, not like on Europe, in terms of the jihadis taking over the country, just an absolute disaster. So I don't really give a fuck if these congressional committees found there was nothing there.
On that note, if you watch politics the way we do, you know, like when they kill off your favorite character and Lost kind of thing.
Yeah.
Bring back Trey Gowdy. I get that he's not there anymore, yeah, but can we just get him at these things?
Oh, yeah.
That guy was good.
He was a fun character.
Yeah.
He was. You know, never really got anything done, but always had some great grilling someone moments.
Yeah, he was good at those.
Yeah, he was, you know, he was one more lawyer, but he actually looked like a reasonably decent one. All right, we're going to wrap the show on there, on that note, and we will be back on Monday with a brand new episode. Thank you for listening. Go listen to Robbie Bernstein's podcast, Run Your Mouth. Don't forget me and Robbie the Fire, who you can follow at Robbie the Fire on Twitter. We'll both be at Porkfest. Once again, I'll be debating Nick Sarwalk on September 10th at the Soho Forum. Go to thesohoforum.org for tickets. I'll be at Caroline's in 2 weeks with Jay Oakerson, the 16th and 17th. And I'll be back at Mises University this year as well. Plus, we got a whole bunch of road stuff coming up. We'll be announcing that next week. So, yeah. Enjoy. See you soon.